Hi, this is Christopher Walken. You're listening to a man whose voice sounds really weird. It's Spud Goodman. Take a listen and tell me if I'm crazy. It sounds like his voice is f***ed up. It's Spud Goodman.
You're listening to Inside the Spud Goodman Radio Show.
Let's get ready, Trumbo! And here he is, the head cheese meister. It's Spud Goodman.
Greetings and a special hola to our listeners in Mexico. I am Spud Goodman.
The Spud Man.
Welcome to our little podcast. I use the descriptive term little, but as I've always believed, and I hope you concur, size isn't everything, right? On this Inside the Spud Goodman Radio Show, we will be taking a look back at the Artificial Intelligence episode, which originally aired on 5/5/2016. It is chock full of famous people, like actor-comedian Asif Manvi, who was a regular on The Daily Show, actor-comedian and social media warrior Michael Rapaport, who has been in so many movies and TV series, I can't list them all. I also visited with Kevin Durant's mother, Wanda Pratt, who gave me the scoop on what it was like raising one of the all-time NBA greats. Yeah, we also have a very interesting musical guest, Future Shock, on this one. So I'd recommend everyone now just give it a listen. Before we begin, I need to, you know, bring on our show's designated laugher, my Aunt Dorothy. Give us a quick snicker, if you will.
Well, that will just have to do. We're just getting started here, you know?
Hey, it was fine. And just try to kick it up a level or two in a bit. And now I need to say that our show's temporary permanent co-host, Gerald Holcomb, is also with us. Say hi so we can keep this thing moving along.
Hi, everyone. My name is Gerald Holcomb, and I am
You know, this happens so often. I already said your name. Do you have anything to offer that's not redundant?
Okay. How about the fact that I'm having a great day today, and I'm really excited about doing this episode as I look back.
Don't you think you might be offering up too much information? I certainly do. Let me bring on our show's intern, Chance, who has, you know, it's been said so often that I might puke that he's supposedly really popular.
It's all fake news.
So, Chance, just go ahead and acknowledge my acknowledgement of you.
Okay. I just acknowledged your acknowledgement of me.
Okay.
And I gotta say, it was a pretty crappy acknowledgement on your part. I mean, I am far and in a way the most popular person on this stupid podcast.
Yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah.
So you'd think I would be introducing you rather than you handling the honors, but hey, whatever.
Chance, honey, take a moment. Yes, Spud could have put it just a bit more effort into his introduction. He knows deep down how popular you are. It's just that he struggles with accepting it. I've told you many times, it's just smarter to take the high road and ignore his insecurities.
You're right as always, Dorothy. I will strive to be the better man. In this case, it's pretty darn easy.
It's such unbridled arrogance for a very young person such as yourself. I mean, especially in terms of the age difference to your fiance, my aunt, who I previously thought loved me more. But, you know, hey, anyway, let's just check out the first segment of the Artificial Intelligence episode. Now, people need to understand that we dealt with this topic in the year 2016, you know. AI has come a long way since then, and now it's all around us as I speak.
Game has changed, yo.
I was able to get through my radio career before being replaced, though, by some computer-generated fake host. I don't think podcast hosts will ever have to worry about being replaced because there are just too many of us now. The last I read, one in every three human beings on Earth has his or her own podcast. I mean, they could never get at everyone, so they probably are not even going to bother. So Dave, run the opening segment.
I'll take care of that when we go to break. But I wanted to ask you on the air if you had a chance to read this month's Scientific American Mind.
What?
Well, that's the magazine I gave you for your birthday last year. It was a 2-year subscription, and you're still getting it, right? My daughter, well, you remember she had her magazine subscription drive, so that's what we gave to our friends that year for gifts. I got to tell you, it's a great magazine. But anyway, in this month's edition, it talks all about artificial intelligence and how it will revolutionize many areas of our economy, including the media. Spud, that means us.
Well, I guess we are members of the media. But how's this going to impact me? Well, as you know, that's really all I care about is me, Spud Goodman. I may be honest. I mean, why fake it, you know?
I know. But the current trend is to set up automated systems to replace humans at music stations around the country. It's been going on for years, as everyone knows. But the magazine said recent advances in artificial intelligence research has made it very feasible to allow radio stations to automate their talk shows, too. Spud,
really?
That should concern us very much.
Gerald, artificial or not, intelligence is something you sure don't got. So just give up now and turn things over to a friggin' robot.
Well, how the hell do you automate a talk show host? I mean, no scientist in the world can create a robot to have an interesting conversation with a celebrity guest. I mean, they might be able to program a few cliche questions like, hey, did you have fun making that movie or doing that TV show? Stuff like that, but not the insightful and in-depth things I bring to my interviews.
No, you really should read the article. It's all about algorithms. They can make driverless cars with an algorithm, then they can surely make an automated talk show host. We need to come up with a plan to make sure this does not happen to us here on the Spud Goodman Show.
Wow, Gerald. Well,
now you've upset me, okay?
Sorry.
If I was ever going to stop doing this show, I wanted it to be on my terms and not be canned and have some robot just take my job over before I'm ready to hang up my talk show mic. I will not let this happen.
Well,
No way.
I think it's out of your hands. You can't stop the technological revolution.
Yeah,
Spud.
But I can try. I'm going to try.
Okay.
But first, I need to play a song. Right now, this is a band that has performed live on our radio show a couple times. Warning Danger. Here's a song off their Keep Out album. It's titled Captured by Robots. You know, now that I guess we're brought this artificial intelligence thing up, maybe there's some sort of maybe there's some sort of information
apropos, maybe,
in this tune. Let's check it out. Roll it.
One day a guy named Jay was working in his shop. Sick of all of his bandmates, he decided to make some robots. Got an old guitar. It sprang to life and named itself GuitarBot. Little did Jay know his life would change. He'd become JayBot. Captured by robots. Captured by robots. Captured by robots. Captured by robots. Son of the ape left no name. The robots ripped out his eyes and intestines, wrapped him in chains like a slave. Now Lord is on to win a bago and drive us from stage to stage. Captured by robots. Captured by robots. Captured.
Goodman Show. Some people like it.
mutants. This is Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo with you on The Spud Goodman Show.
You know, Gerald, by bringing up this topic back then, you really kind of triggered me. You know, scaring me that my job was in jeopardy. It really freaked me out.
Pissing our pants yet?
Well, I was just trying to get you to be proactive in fighting off this whole artificial intelligent movement that seems to be taking over the world now.
Well, this episode was before I was on the show, but I remember this did upset you, Spud. You told your mother you couldn't sleep or eat for days, right?
Yeah.
She told me when you were, she told me then that she thought you were just whining and she wasn't worried about you, but I fell for it. I brought you McDonald's food for almost a week.
Yeah, you know, I might have milked that one a bit. The free food, though, was greatly appreciated, Aunt Dorothy.
You're welcome.
Feel free to do this again, you know, anytime. I don't do McDonald's now, but, you know, but about a foot-long veggie from Subway would always be appreciated.
My future wife, Dorothy, will not be your personal Grubhub delivery person, Spud. Those days are long gone. She has other priorities now.
Oh, sweetie. Just know that if you ever need something to eat and I'm away from the kitchen, I would drop by your favorite place, Dairy Queen, to pick you up a meal.
Thank you, Dorothy.
You're welcome.
Okay, can we get back on topic here? Right now, we're going to run my interview with actor, comedian, and former Daily Show correspondent Asif Manvi. I really like this guy. And I think back then he was out plugging some rom-com movie he was in. But he was just really good in giving his take on stuff, you know, while, you know, doing commentary on in any setting or whatever. I'm just, the guy's brilliant, okay? Dave, run the segment.
All right, please welcome actor, writer, Asif Manvi. Hey, I'm a fan of your work, so thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Right. So you got a new movie that's out, Mother's Day, and the cast is basically an all-star roster with Julia Roberts, Jennifer Aniston, Jason Sudeikis, Timothy Oliphant, and others besides yourself. So, like, what is... And it's also directed by Gary Marshall, so this one's a sure thing for the Rom-Com Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. It's a, you know, story about family and mothers and motherhood and all different sort of aspects of it. If you're fans of movies like, you know, Valentine's Day or New Year's Eve, which Gary Marshall also did, then you're going to enjoy this, you know?
Yeah, I'm no expert on this film genre, but since, you know, I want to be with women whenever possible, I do see a lot of these type movies, and I don't want you to spill the beans on the storyline or anything, but I take it people don't end up sad and lonely at the end?
No. What a terrible rom-com that would be. Or maybe amazing, where everyone ended up sad and lonely. It would be sort of like real life, maybe.
Yeah.
No, this is, you know, look, it's very heartwarming. It is fun. It's fun for the whole family. There's, you know, Kate Hudson and I play an interracial couple, and she hasn't told her parents that she's married to somebody who is not Caucasian, and her parents kind of have an issue with that. So there's like a underlying serious story there, but it's deftly handled by Gary Marshall in a kind of comedic and romantic way, you know?
Wow. You know, in my life, I've futilely chased a beautiful woman or two, but, you know, I never ended up with one, and maybe that's why I don't mind rom-coms, because it gives me hope. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right, well, exactly. So you've logged a lot of air miles as a senior Middle Eastern correspondent for The Daily Show. It must have been a grueling assignment. Are you considering writing a book or doing a documentary about your career?
Well, I have written a book, actually. It's called No Man's Man.
Okay.
And it's available wherever books are sold. It's on Amazon or wherever you want to go. And it actually does talk about my life growing up as an immigrant kid in America, and also my work on The Daily Show and being an actor in New York City and all that stuff. So, yes, it's a great idea, and I already had it.
All right, I tried to tee that up for you. All right, super. So just how big a reality gap is there these days with the fake news versus what is churned out, you know, by the so-called legit media? Because I have to hit info on my remote control to check out the show description during any news reporting to make sure I'm not getting punked with the fake stuff.
Right. Well, you know, the fake stuff sometimes is actually telling you more the truth than the real.
Yes.
Quote, unquote, real stuff, right?
Yes.
So now I think those lines have been blurred, and now that Jon Stewart has left, I feel like, you know, there's the world of fake news or satirical news has opened up, you know, with Samantha Bee and John Oliver and different people like that, Larry, and I think that you see more and more of it now, and actually it sometimes makes more of an impact in terms of what they're talking about and the issues that they're taking on than CNN does. You know, I think they have, I mean, Oliver certainly has taken on some issues that the regular media has not touched and made real impact, you know?
He's broke. I mean, he's broke news. I mean, the man's
yeah,
have
exactly.
an impact.
So,
definitely.
Yeah.
Well, what's your take on the first 100 days of a Trump administration? Frightening or the best entertainment ever seen by mankind?
Oh, my God. You know, could it be both? It could be both.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess it could.
It could be. It's frightening. I mean, it's the best entertainment because you're going to see a man who is so out of his league and out of his depth in terms of... I don't think he really wants to be president. I think he just got so far down the road on this that now he can't back out. I think he was hoping that this would just be kind of, you know, a message he would send and, like, he would get out of it and not get... But I think he's done so well, which tells us something about America and what's going on. But I think the poor guy is alone at night. Well, not alone, because he's with his wife, his immigrant wife, may I add. But, you know, and I think he's sort of thinking, like, oh, my God, what have I done? Like, I'm actually winning this thing. I kind of wish I hadn't gotten this far. I think he's clearly out of his depth, and but he's great at spinning. So I think, you know, maybe we'll he could very well become president. It could, and that could be frightening. You know, it will be.
Yeah, I got my fingers and my toes and anything else I can cross. But I learned now after living a few years that anything's possible. So yeah, I'll go leave it at that.
Yeah.
So. You know,
if I may, Spud.
What? Just a second, Asif. I'll be right back. What? I'm just starting to get into this interview, and you try and mess up my momentum? Are you trying to freeze me here, like before a big free throw or field goal attempt?
No, not at all. I just wanted to suggest you rethink your rather risky decision to continually make fun of Donald Trump live on the air.
Why?
Spud, he will soon be our commander in chief. You do remember the revenge Richard Nixon took out on those who opposed him, right? You know, he had an enemies list.
Yeah, but...
Well, I'm sure by now Trump's people know who you are and what you're saying about him on your show.
Ooh, I'm so scared. Well, what's he or his people gonna do to me? He can't ruin my career, as it's already what? He's gonna have the IRS audit me? Well, that will be a very quick and boring audit, unless real soon they include talk show hosts with that $15 an hour deal.
Listen, I'll let you get back to interviewing Asif, but do keep in mind the risk you take when making fun of Mr. Trump.
Thank you for your advice. Hey, Asif, I'm back.
If Asif Manvi ruled the world, what would be your first order given? What do you think?
Oh my gosh, that's a tough one. My first order given if Asif Manvi ruled the world, I think we would have to. It's not really that funny, but it's sort of like true. I think we're going to have to take in a lot of those Syrian refugees. You know.
You mean step up to the plate? Is that what you're saying? Like the rest of the world?
What's that?
Like step up to the plate like the rest of the world? Is that what you're
kind of
saying?
I think step up to the plate and start, yeah, exactly, you know, and kind of integrate those people into, you know, give them a place to go, you know?
Yeah, well, I guess that will depend on what happens this November, so.
That's
yeah.
If I ruled the world, though, because then I could make all the rules. I could be like, you know, it's tough. When you rule the world, also, like, if you rule the world, I think the first thing I would do is sort of get myself a nicer place to live,
oh,
you know?
Yeah, there you go.
It'd probably be something like isn't that the human condition? Like, first you're like, listen, I want to live in a palace, you know? That's like, we've seen what happens when people think they rule the world, you know, like Donald Trump, for example.
Absolutely. But, you know, he wouldn't need that himself because he already has it, but yeah.
What I mean. Like, he already does sort of think he rules the world, right? So, like, he's first thing he did was he's like, I'm going to cover everything in gold-plated and put my name on everything. So that's probably, sadly, maybe that's the human condition, you know?
His taste is very similar to, like, some Middle Eastern despots, though. You notice that? Like, the aesthetics?
Listen, hey, I think, you know, if you look at all of the autocrats and despots in the world, the first thing they did was live in sort of a gold-plated, you know, world of their own making.
Yeah, they go big. They definitely go big, just like him. But yeah, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, okay?
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, Mr. Asif Manvi.
You know, I felt then and still do now that you and Asif were very unkind to President Donald Trump. I mean, so what if he prefers his furniture and accessories all gold-plated? He is sort of America's king, you know.
These guys, they make millions of dollars. They're smart as hell.
We took care of that king issue in 1776. Face it, Trump has horrible taste in just about everything.
Well, this episode was recorded just before he was elected for the first time in November of 2016. Then he won again in 2020. And boy, am I looking forward to him returning to office at our next election. He will be 3-0.
Oh, that won't happen if, as I'm expecting, the women of this country will bury him again at the ballot box. They're ready to vote this time for sure. And right now, he's 1-2 and 0-3 if you go with the popular vote.
Yes!
I know my mom can hardly wait to vote against him. She's not a big Joe Biden fan, but Trump really pisses her off. Just looking at him gets her going. My dad has to watch Fox News only on his phone with earbuds in when she's home. Most of the time, she never even knows he has it on.
Okay, well, let's move on to my interview and the live in-studio performance of our musical guest, Future Shock. Now, these guys are really different, not like any other musical guests we have had on over the years. They actually did seem to be from another planet. Dave, roll it.
All right, it's musical guest interview time. Please greet our musical guest, Future Shock. Gentlemen, I believe I can call you gentlemen, though with those masks on, I do really need some artificial intelligence to verify this. Would you guys be willing to breach your security policy and divulge your name or at least an alias in the instrument you'll be playing?
I'm Raygun.
I am the Doctor.
And we are Future Shock.
Super. Well, I understand you originally come from Kepler 22b in the Cygnus constellation, 600 light years from Earth. I'm not familiar with that region. Could you give us the basics? Like, do you have running water and cable TV there?
No cable television. It's, picture it as a future Earth.
Oh,
similar nice. Elements.
Nice, super. Well, from what I've read about Future Shock, you clearly are upset with the corporate music machine that dumps the same cookie cutter jingles on, you know, an ill-informed, you know, public. So this we agree on. How do we fight the power when these corporations rule the world, or at least most radio stations?
Well, we actually met on our way here. We were at an armory, and we're actually trying to get some weapons. So we have to force ourselves. We have to fight the power.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I don't really know what fight the power means, but I love that term. I love it. Because I mean, this crap that's played everywhere, it's like you can't escape it. At doctor's offices, at Forever 21s.
It's everywhere.
And blasting on our teenagers' car stereos as they drive through our neighborhoods.
It's poisoning.
Yes.
The
all right.
Pineal glands.
We're on the same page
it's
there.
So terrible.
What's the name of the first song, and is it popular on your prior planet, Kepler 22b?
First song will be called Erotic Dancer.
Yes, it's very popular.
True story.
Super. Well, let's do it.
As she moves across the floor,
watch her sweat.
She has an appetite for more,
watch her sweat.
Mesmerizing the way she moves and the way she dances.
She dances.
Never mind that she's 19,
watch her sweat.
Can't nobody tell her anything,
watch her sweat.
She's convinced herself nothing matters anymore. So sit tight and sad, sit tight and sad. She's a neurotic dad and
time.
She's a neurotic dad and time.
Neurotic dad and time.
How far will she go? She's gone. She's a neurotic dad and time.
Neurotic dad and time.
She's a neurotic dad and time.
Neurotic dad and time.
How far will she go? She's gone. She's fixing up her hair, her legs wrapped around the chair. She moves like a veteran when she tightens hands, she tightens hands. As it starts to rain, it's a damn shame what she does for fame. For a bottle of champagne, and she's got no one to blame as the rain washes away her pain. She's a neurotic daddy's
time. Neurotic daddy's
time. She's a neurotic daddy's time.
Neurotic daddy's time.
How far will she go till she's gone? Cause she's a neurotic dad inside.
Neurotic dad inside.
She's a neurotic dad inside.
Neurotic dad inside.
How far will she go till she's gone? Moves at night on the disco lights, flashing like a strobe. Throws her clothes onto the floor after she throws her soul. Round and round on the pole she goes, where she stops no one knows. Round and round on the pole she goes, where she stops no one knows. Moves at night on the disco lights, flashing like a strobe. Throws her clothes onto the floor after she throws a soul. Round and round on the pole she goes, where she stops no one knows. Round and round on the pole she goes, where she stops no one knows. Cause she's a neurotic dancer. She's a neurotic dancer.
And
how far will she go till she's gone? Ooh, she's a neurotic dancer.
Neurotic dancer.
She's a neurotic dancer.
Neurotic dancer.
And how far will she go till she's gone? Prays for better days,
hey, hey, hey.
But she can't get away,
hey, hey.
Her mind is here to stay,
hey.
At the gentleman's ballet,
hey, hey.
She prays for better days, ooh, but she can't get away. No, no, her mind is here to stay, at the gentleman's ballet.
Thank you.
Erotic dancer.
We are future Sean.
This is the Spud Goodman Show.
I still remember those guys from Future Shock. You are right. They really did seem to be from another planet or something. I don't think they were acting or pretending to be aliens, as, well, they were aliens.
Nah, I mean, I'm pretty sure they were just playing the part.
I don't know.
If they were really aliens, man, I mean, think about it. They would never have come on our show. They would have gotten booked on a much bigger, more highly rated show like that now MAGA head Joe Rogan's.
This guy's been stoned since the third grade.
I mean, unless they wanted to stay low profile, you know, when you think about it, what better show to go on if you want to remain low profile than ours? Like, no way any government official would ever listen to us. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, I it could be possible, I guess.
Yeah. No self-respecting real alien from another galaxy would ever come on your show. I mean, for what reason?
You don't know that. Anyway, let's return to our discussion in the studio we had regarding that artificial intelligence thing. Dave, run it.
You know, Spud, I don't want to upset you, but you do know that everything you say on the air is fair game to be fed to the neural networks that will allow computers to transform your words into bits of sound and store them into a bank of information that can be drawn from to replicate an ongoing conversation with, say, you know, a guest on this show. That technology is here right now.
Heads are spinning.
So you think I should start talking in, like, Pig Latin to mess up their coding? Because I'm not real good with Pig Latin, and I don't know any real foreign languages. This is going to be hard to protect my intellectual property while doing this show here. You know, maybe I should just start babbling incoherently so no one can understand what I'm saying.
Well, you know what? I think computer programs are now smart enough to decode whatever gibberish you toss out and understand the true content of what you're trying to communicate. It said in the magazine that smart machines will become more intelligent than carbon-based machines.
Well, what's a carbon-based machine?
That would be human beings. Ray Kurzweil, Google's head guru, said that this will happen by 2045, so we better prepare ourselves, I guess. Listen, I don't know if there's anything really we can do in the long term to keep from being replaced.
Look, I will not just throw up my hands and turn my job over to an algorithm. No, sir, not gonna happen.
Spud, do not fear the algorithm man. They are changing the world, so drop the hate and be a fan. As real soon you won't have to lift a finger to play anything from the full catalog of Steely Dan.
You know, Spud, looking back in history, no one could stop the steam engine or the rapid-firing rifle or...
Look, technology has not stopped the Kardashians yet. And I know they are like cockroaches and will be the last form of humanity, you know, when the apocalypse arrives. But I don't know. But I bet they're going to be able to withstand whatever Silicon Valley has in mind to replace them. I mean, probably with, like, holograms, as that E-Channel then wouldn't have to listen to them bitch about stuff 24/7. So, you know, maybe there is an upside, you know, to this technology if it's utilized ethically.
When I came back from the hospital, the first thing I did was go look at my vag in the mirror. It looks better looking than before.
I don't know. You do remember Watson, right? You know, back in 2011, IBM built a now crude computer that beat the reigning champion on Jeopardy. It could read 800 million pages a second. Now, in a couple of years, it'll probably be 10 times that fast. Face it, we're losing the battle with smart machines.
Well, maybe so.
Wow.
But
Gerald, wow.
We are.
Yeah. Well, but they're going to need a buttload of terabytes to store up all of what I have in my talk show arsenal.
Maybe.
You know, it won't be easy for them. I can tell you that. That's for sure. But, you know, we still have a show to do here regardless. So just see if our next guest is ready to go.
Oh, right. Yes.
I still feel trying to make me believe that some computer like that Watson from IBM was going to take over the world was wrong. And, well, it didn't happen. As far as I know, I am still in complete control of my life with no outside interference from Big Brother's machines. I mean, so far.
I don't think so.
Well, for all we know, it could be an illusion that you are still in control of your life.
Oh, with the choices Spud has made in his life the last few years, I seriously doubt that his mind and will has been taken over by some high-level technology. Or, well, if so, then it's a terrible technology.
Anything is possible, but count me in as a no vote. No one could be as dumb as you, Spud, if an app or something was controlling you.
I agree without stipulating to the dumb part, okay? That's a subjective opinion, Chance. But let's just move on to my interview with actor, comedian, podcast host, and social media warrior, Michael Rappaport. This was the first time he was on our show, and I knew then that no host can control this dude. But actually, you know, for the most part, he was basically nice to me. Dave, run the segment.
Please say hello to actor, director, comedian, and podcast host, Michael Rappaport. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. What's going on?
Well, I think there is something going on. You now have a documentary out, a new one that you directed titled Hard Lovin' Woman from the Red Bull series Let It Play. It's a story of actress Juliette Lewis and her career away from the movie biz, right? Fronting her own rock band Juliette and the Licks?
Yes, yes. It's about her. You know, it's sort of a portrait of an artist. You know, she has a, you know, very sort of underground, independent, successful rock and roll band that she created and started and funded about 15 years ago. And, you know, obviously her film career and what she accomplished as an actress speaks for itself. Everything from Cape Fear to Natural Born Killers to What's Eating Gilbert Grape. You know, she's a, you know, one of the most iconic actors of her generation. And it was a real pleasure, you know, sort of doing this portrait of an artist for Red Bull TV called Hard Lovin' Woman.
Right. You know, we've played Juliet's music on this show, and I have to admit, when I pulled the song initially, I was not aware, you know, of her, you know, and the band. It was just a good song. She's not just another actress doing a vanity project, right? Because she's kind of the real deal.
I don't think she does anything for vanity. You know, she doesn't play around. I mean, you know, one of the most shocking things you'll see in the movie is her live performances are incredible. I think she channels a young Mick Jagger and Janis Joplin. She goes balls to the wall, you know, you know, and I think that, you know, she's a very charismatic, very funny, interesting lady. Girl, you'd probably be offended if I said lady. I'm looking forward to people seeing Hard Lover Woman. I'm very proud of it, and I'm very proud to, you know, have done something, you know, on Juliet.
Right.
Say, Spud.
Yeah.
While you were talking to Michael, I checked out Juliet Lewis's music on YouTube. She's interesting, huh?
Excuse me for a moment, Michael.
Yes, she is. She's really, really good. Besides being a great actress, she can sing.
But, you know, there are a lot of actors and comedians who tell themselves they can sing, and they put out an album or two, but most of them are painful to listen to.
Well, I hear you. Besides Bruce Willis, there are a buttload of others I could toss out, like Jennifer Love Hewitt's three albums and Shaquille O'Neal's attempt at rap and Alyssa Milano's pop record, though I have to state, I still have dreams of when I interviewed her on my old TV show. She smelled really nice.
Well, can I ask how Bill O'Reilly smelled when you interviewed him? I bet he wore a lot of Old Spice.
I don't remember, but I should get back to my interview with Michael. I've always really liked his work in movies and TV, you know?
All right, I'm back. Sorry about that. Well, let's talk a little bit about you for a sec. In the past, you've done the music doc thing before, like with a favorite of mine, A Tribe Called Quest, titled Beats, Rhymes, and Life, right? The travels of A Tribe Called Quest, correct? In addition to doing a 30 for 30 film on ESPN honoring the 1970 NBA champs New York Knicks. So here's my question.
That's
Is directing or acting, what is it? What turns your crank more?
You know, I love them both. My first love will always be acting. I've had a great time making the documentaries that you mentioned. I appreciate that. The biggest difference between the two is that when you're acting, you can only take on the responsibility of what you can control, which is really just, you know, your part. And even that, you don't have full control over, because it goes in an editor and director's hands, and they ultimately craft and carve out your performance.
Right.
But as a director, you have to answer all the questions. And it's really your sensibility and your taste that's put out there. You know, I haven't made any of these documentaries on my own. I pride myself on putting together people that are smarter than me to make me look good. But at the end of the day, my face and my head and my vision is on the chopping block. So I love them both. I want to continue to do both. And I want to continue to direct more, whether it's docs, you know, and feature films. And I've had a good time doing it, and I'm looking forward to people, you know, now seeing Hard Love and Woman.
Right. Well, let's touch on your acting career for a moment. You've done a ton of movies. I mean, a lot of movies. But your role on Justified as Daryl Crow was maybe one of the best TV performances in 2014. So I was kind of wondering, how did you not get an Emmy for that? Have you pissed off, like, all of old school Hollywood or what? You got robbed.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, working on Justified was a lot of fun. I was a fan of the show. And then Tim Olyphant and Walt Goggins were very welcoming and encouraging and supportive. You know, I knew I was walking into, you know, to their world and to their show. I, you know, a lot of that had, you know, that I was able to do was because of them. I appreciate that you said that. It was just a lot of fun. It was a challenge. And it's always cool to get opportunity to do something a little different. And I'm very proud of what we were able to do on Justified. But a lot of the credit goes to the writers and to those guys.
Super. Well, away from showbiz, I know you are or were a hooper, but I hear you also play a little fantasy football, too. So, well, maybe not as well as Gary Delabonte and a few others associated with Howard's show. Was last season just unlucky for you? What do you think?
Well, no, I mean, you know, fantasy football, you can never predict anything. So, I mean, yeah, I have to say some of it was you know, bad luck. I actually made it, you know, I beat Matt Berry. You know, the supposed fantasy guru.
Yeah.
I beat his ass really good.
Yeah.
So that was almost more the fact that I lost the season. You know, didn't bother me as much because I had the satisfaction of beating, you know, one of these faux gurus in the name of Matthew Berry. So I have a lot of fun with it. I have a lot of fun, you know, hanging around and messing with the Stern guys. They're all good dudes. And it's all sort of tongue-in-cheek, it's all in fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what's cool, you beat the guy that gets paid to do that stuff, so that was cool.
Isn't that funny that I beat the guy that gets paid to be the fantasy expert? Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
I actually beat him 2 years in a row, and the 2 years in a row that I beat him, it was funny because those are my first 2 years playing. So next year, I'm going to actually have my dog, who's blind in one eye and has three legs. He's going to make my picks for me, and I guarantee I'm going to beat Matthew Berry again.
All right, super. That's for the record. We just heard that. All right, well, you host your own podcast. I am Rappaport Stereo.
Yeah, you can quote me on that.
Pardon me? Oh, I'm quoting you. I am quoting you. I am. It's on. It's
yes.
It's definitely going out. So, but let me get to this. You host your own podcast. I am Rappaport Stereo Podcast. It's pretty darn good, as I would recommend it. My question is, you know, when, and I've asked this before to a few others, when just about every living being on Earth now has their own podcast, do you think there should be some kind of government test that people need to pass before they're allowed to do this activity themselves?
Yes. I totally agree with that. I think there should be some government test or so, like, you know, like a driver's license test or like a podcast license test.
They could get
start
hurt.
Your own podcast.
Yeah.
But I think one of the beauties is that it is a forum for people to tell their stories, tell their point of views on things. And one of the great things about the podcasting world is that some people that have literally come out of nowhere, just like YouTube, you know, have found success in podcasting. I think the cream rises to the top. Obviously, the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast, the fact that we're in stereo right there alone separates us from every other podcast. And also the fact that, you know, I've been doing it with my best friend, who we've been friends with since 1982. We've essentially been podcasting since the 80s. So, you know, we got the carte blanche as far as a license. But I think, you know, I think maybe at some point the government needs to regulate who could start a podcast and why. You need to at least fill out some sort of application.
All right, I know, because like, they could hurt themselves, newbies. But all right, well, let's end it on that note.
Oh, yeah, you go nuts doing it.
There you have it, Mr. Michael Rappaport.
Michael is a pretty good actor. I really liked him on the Netflix show Atypical.
Oh, I remember you really liked that show's Chance.
I do know I would never like to get into a war on Twitter or whatever the hell Elon Musk is now calling it.
I don't want to live in a country that looks nothing like the country I grew up in. Is that bigoted?
Because Michael's just basically brutal when he wants to be. No holds barred. I think he got into a heated exchange a few years ago with NBA legend Kevin Durant. I forgot what the beef was, but it got a little ugly. I was on Team Durant during that one. I mention this as his mom, Wanda Pratt, was a guest on this episode, and she is coming up next. All right. You know, she in that interview, she gave me the basics on what it was like to raise one of the greatest basketball players of all time. You know, she's a really cool woman. So, Dave, run the interview.
All right, please welcome Wanda Pratt to the show. Wanda, for those who are not aware, you are the mother of NBA player Kevin Durant. So there's a move.
Yes.
There's a movie being aired on the Lifetime Channel about you and your son. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, super. Well, you know, before we get going here, I have to say, we here in the Seattle area will always consider Kevin as one of ours, no matter where he's playing. I mean, he was our, and I say our, Seattle SuperSonics first round draft choice in 2007. So we still have so much love for him up here. So I just thought I'd pass that on.
But thank you so much, and I appreciate you guys saying that. Thank you.
Absolutely. You know, and when he comes back to town to play our Sonic someday, and that will happen, he's going to feel our love. So anyway, all right, let's talk about the movie, The Real MVP. So it tells your story of raising Kevin and introducing him to sports in the Washington, D.C. area. Is that correct?
Yes, it talks about raising. I have two sons, Anthony and Kevin, and it talks about at the early years of our lives. I was a single mother starting at age 21, and it goes through the highs and the lows of our lives and the sacrifices that were made and some of the things that the boys were doing and some of the things that I had gone through as a, not only as a mother, but as a woman, and kind of give a little detail. And so I think it's a great movie, and it will resonate with so many.
Super. Well, you know, having spent a bit of time on the AAU scene myself over the years, I pretty much meant you didn't have many weekends without some tournament or game, right? That's a lot of snacks and juice boxes to pack in the early days, huh?
Yes, I would drive the guys around. I would have snacks. Sometimes I was a team mom, and I was a driver, and I was whatever was needed. And just like most of the moms and dads of children in extracurricular activities, you just do what you have to do to keep them going. And because I think the important part is just having something that the family can focus on for each child.
Right.
So each child could be worthy and important. And that's what it initially started out to be.
Right.
Was never something that I dealt with because we were such a strong presence with Kevin. And so it was something that I didn't deal with at all.
Okay. All right.
We were very focused on it for him. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, at what age did Kevin make the commitment to basketball when he decided to go all in, you know, with workouts and training? You know, was it early on?
Well, it was early on. Even before he decided he wanted to be a professional basketball player, he was committed to his team and what he was doing because that's what I required. He couldn't give anything half-hearted. Neither one of them could, and they had to commit to what they were doing at the time, and that was very important. I didn't allow my sons to quit anything. They had to fulfill their obligation of whatever they decided, and then if necessary, we would move on. And so that's what his focus was.
I had read that you were pretty tough. I guess you were a coach, actually, you know, because you were supporting him, pushing him along, right? You were tough. Was that accurate?
Well, I heard that I was tough. Sometimes now I look back and I think, wow, you were a little tough. But at the time, I did what I thought was important to do, and it seemed to pay out. Both my sons are doing well, and I'm proud of them both, and so. It worked. How about that?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. It did work. Well, let me ask you this. Did you have to go rebound for him much? My mom really wasn't into basketball. She would always tell me to put the ball away and go mow the lawn or something. But you were there a lot in the early days, right?
Yeah, but I didn't do rebounding, no.
Oh, okay.
No, he had to go get his own ball. I'm sorry.
All right, super. All right, Wanda, last question. What has been your most memorable moment as the mom of Kevin Durant? You know, I mean... Can you toss one out?
Well, as a player, the most memorable moment is the speech, and not that he mentioned me, but that he had reached an accomplishment in the dream that he had set out many, many years ago, and that was really, really a proud moment for me because I know the number of years that he put in working extremely hard and how he continues to work hard. And for him to reach that level, I was just really extremely proud of him.
All right, super. Well, I'm going to let you go, but please pass on to your son that we Hoop fans up in Seattle will never forget him and we'll always love him, all right?
All right. Have a great day, love.
All right, you take care.
All right.
Miss Wanda Pratt.
Never having had children myself, I know nothing about raising kids, but I have thought that it might be a bit depressing if I had a son or daughter that could kick my ass on the basketball court when they were like 8 or 9. I mean, I could probably handle it if they were like in their junior or senior year of high school and they beat me in a game of horse or one-on-one. But I think, you know, Most NBA and WNBA players were probably able to destroy their parents at a very young age, you know, and yeah, if you think about it, that must have hurt a bit for any father. Mothers, though, seem to be much more secure and well-balanced on this issue.
I could beat my dad in any video game since I was around 5 or 6. It was so easy as I've got really quick reflexes and my thumbs are highly coordinated. Well, he stopped playing me at around age 9 or 10. It's kind of a poor sport. I think, actually, my mom about that time was asking me never to play any video games against him as he often would start crying to her afterwards. It is sad and I did feel sorry for him.
Rat on your pop and Kaiser Soze will get you.
Oh, well, I have to say I appreciate you playing video games with me, Chance. And I know you try and let me win sometimes, but I still just can't seem to beat you. You are a world-class player.
I try to take it down a notch or two when we play, but, well, it's hard for me, even with you.
You know, my kids and I play all sorts of games together, and I still dominate, but sometimes I do let our youngest, Dwight, win at Mousetrap. That is a very popular game in the Holcomb family.
What's your name, scumbag?
Mousetrap?
Yeah.
Do they still make that game? But anyway, I think we're going to play a short pastiche from Dave, our audio director. It's some dudes talking about something that's like way over my head. Dave puts these things together and they're always very interesting. So Dave, please roll it.
Our ICBMs, which of course are substantially larger and heavier than even our Jupiter IRBM, still have a thrust, total thrust of well under 500,000 pounds. Now the Saturn will have 1.5 million.
Yes.
It will be powered by 8 engines similar to those used in the Jupiter, having of course only one of them.
Yes.
Each of these engines will even give a little more thrust than the one engine in the Jupiter. So with 8 of these engines, we have about 10 times more thrust as the Jupiter.
Mm-hmm. Danger! Danger!
What danger?
Yes, now we will put on top of it a Titan first stage.
Warning!
In other words, the whole first stage of the ICBM Titan.
Yes.
That's the second stage. And on top of that, we'll sit a third stage.
Danger!
And if it's a high-speed deep space mission, maybe even a fourth stage.
Warning! Danger! Warning! Danger! Warning! 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 Danger!
If necessary,
and that can be tailored to the needs of the customer, so to speak.
Yeah, yes.
In this respect, we're quite flexible.
Well, yes, and this is what I like about this idea, that you have here a very heavy, very powerful first stage, which can carry almost anything desired, and it doesn't always have to be the same thing.
No.
Never fear, Smith is here. You're perfectly safe.
We had a joke in those days that the purpose of the exercise for these missiles was to make the target more dangerous than the launching site. Now, many mishaps, of course, happen in the launching site also, and I think the argument was never quite settled as to whether the V-2 ever got to the point where the target was really more dangerous than the launching site.
Danger! Danger!
What danger?
Like I said, that last segment was over my head, but those dudes, you know, did sound really smart. Yeah. Okay, we're going to now play the last segment in the studio from the artificial intelligence episode. Hit it.
You know, if I'm going to be replaced by a smart machine full of that artificial intelligence, I'm going to enjoy all the time I have left doing this gig. I guess, you know, you probably feel pretty comfortable right now. I mean, no way venture capitalists are going to waste any money trying to come up with an automated co-host for any show.
Oh.
Third wheels like you guys are like safe. For sure.
You know, I hadn't thought about that. You mean there would still be a need for human activity in a radio talk show? Now that you mention it, it makes sense. A co-host could be the canary in the mine shaft in case of a catastrophe. Like if computer program algorithms were compromised and nonstop profanity started spewing out, you know, people like me would be there to hit the kill switch.
You can't!
I mean, man, another case of me shooting too high career-wise, and now look where it got me. I should've lowered my sights and maybe gone the co-host route years ago myself. I mean, there's total job security in it.
Well,
what was I thinking?
Maybe you could step down now and we could swap positions if that would be in your best interest.
No, what? It's way too late for that move.
Oh.
You know, once a person has experienced the euphoria of being a talk show host,
oh,
I mean, they could never degrade themselves by being just a stuffed animal sidekick on the air. It's like,
well,
it's like
really
being think. Rich. Since I've never been loaded, it's really not that difficult accepting I'll never have a ton of money. But if I once had a buttload of cash and suddenly lost it, well, that would be very different.
Well,
let's play bingo.
I agree. Being a co-host, at least on your show, is often emotionally shattering, especially as I have such grand career aspirations.
Well, you see, that's where you went wrong. You having big dreams of maybe, you know, being a host one day is
right.
The worst thing you could have ever done to yourself. I mean, keep those aspirations under control. And, you know, if you want to live a long and happy life, it's just a suggestion.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, really, we should both be jumping in on the artificial intelligence train before it leaves the station without us. But I was Googling it during the band, and I read that algorithms are to the 21st century what coal was to the 19th century. If they stop working it, it will be the end of the world as we know it.
Well, you know, there is all this talk about, you know, breaking up the big banks. Everybody's heard that a lot lately.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I get it, but maybe we should be thinking about breaking up Facebook, Google, IBM, and Microsoft, as it seems like, you know, they're going to be the kings of this new world, and even more than they already are.
Yeah, but, you know, both my wife and I enjoy Facebook a lot. It keeps us connected with all of our family members around the country and the world. You know, when our young ones go on their missions, it's a wonderful force in many people's lives, Spud.
Gerald, yeah, Facebook keeps people connected, but you know that everything you ever type will be inspected, and very soon, before you know it, your soul will be totally infected.
Trust them and the other companies dabbling in this artificial intelligence thingy? I say we take a stand and start an online movement right now to try and shut these companies down. You know, I could write some catchy sayings. I'll probably obviously have to use that old one. You know, the whole world is watching. You know, it's a proven winner.
But
that's so hot.
I would give serious thought to what those all-powerful companies might do to you if you challenge them. You know, a few clicks and your total existence on Earth could be wiped out, deleted, and sent to the cyber trash bin.
Yeah, you know, good point. But I know there's a whole lot more things I need to think this. I got to think a whole lot of things through. But right now, I got to close the show.
Okay.
Like, quick. So
that reference you made about you and other co-hosts being a canary in the coal mine in the radio business, you know, if machines were ever used to automate my job, didn't age well, as you guys were already a dying breed. I mean, today, I bet if all the few remaining co-hosts on every radio show in the world suddenly disappeared into thin air, no one would even notice. And let me say also, I don't know many people who even own canaries these days, so they might not have that many to put in coal mines. And yeah, one final thing. With climate change, we don't need any coal mines anyway.
Well, I was making a point, Spud, that if necessary, we co-hosts would be willing to give up our careers in service to you and other talk show hosts. Because, you know, that's just what we do. We put everything on the line for you.
No, you haven't. You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Jeez, Gerald. You make it sound like co-hosts are like war heroes putting their lives at risk to defend us all. And it's like Spud said. If you guys all went away, it might take a few years to even know it, let alone anyone actually care.
You know, I'm feeling a little bit ganged up on here.
Well, maybe we should give Gerald a break.
Thank
Co-hosts
you.
Do have purpose in life. Maybe not much, but some purpose.
And your attempt to defend Facebook and the other tech companies then now sounds pretty weak, as they have successfully taken over the world, and very soon there will be no human voices heard on radio, TV, and on the phone, and maybe in our personal lives. Like someday soon they could set up one of those algorithms to converse with our significant others, you know, with or without our permission. You know, yeah, and well, wait a sec here. That might be a godsend to many in like stale and boring relationships. I may have to rethink the algorithm angle as possibly destroying mankind.
I think it'd be actually...
Oh, Spud, that last remark just further clarifies why you've had such a sad history with all of the women in your life over the years.
Well,
expecting technology to perform what you are either incapable of or unwilling to express in romantic relationships is wrong.
Yeah. What Dorothy said, though, I someday might want to write an algorithm to help me take my video game talents to another level. I'm already, like, really, really good, but with a little help from some well-done code, I could maybe be the best on the planet. It's worth contemplating.
Listen, I do enjoy Facebook, and I do use Microsoft products, but I am no pawn of the tech industry. For gosh sakes, just the other day, you were making fun of me for still using my VCR, Spud.
I'm just saying that listening to this episode like 7 years later, you don't sound much like Nostradamus, you know? Most of what you said then now sounds really ignorant.
You stupid, ignorant son of a bitch, dumb bastard!
Well, some of what you said on that episode has proven to now be wrong. I don't think it's a good thing to be playing what we said years ago, as, you know, over time, things do change a lot.
Well, we signed a contract to do this new podcast, you know, that takes apart our prior episodes. So let's hope that what we said in the next few ones that, you know, we're going to take a look at won't sound as embarrassing nowadays.
Well, I think anyone now listening, if they had a recording of what they were saying 7 years ago, might also not sound so impressive now.
Yeah. I understand that. But, you know, okay, well, let's just end it on that note. I need to wrap up this one. I am Spud Goodman. Be all that you can be. And I mean that. God bless and ciao.
Bye-bye.
You know, I really thought this episode was going to be one of our best. But for some reason, early on, I became the target for abuse. Maybe later Dave can do some editing and lessen the damage done to my reputation.
That's not going to happen. We don't edit out stupid things people say on this podcast, okay? If we did, there'd be nothing much to air.
Yeah, Gerald. I wouldn't count on our director, Dave, to save you from what you said on this one or any of our episodes.
That's not what we do, you know, in like a free country based on democratic principles. We let the people decide who is a douche and who isn't.
Let's have a toast for the douchebags.
I mean, not some professional doing his magic in post-production.
Well, not even a small edit here and there?
That would be a hard no. Now, can everyone please exit the studio? We have someone else coming in soon.
You got it.
Bye, Dave.
See you later, Dave.
So, could I meet with you, Dave? Maybe out in the parking lot just for a moment? Dave?
The Spud Goodman Radio Show is written and directed by Spud Goodman. Executive producer, Lori Madsen. Produced by David Brenneman of Rosedale Audio Productions. Original music by Michael Spotts and Tom Harmon. Video director, TJ Pites. On-air talent, Rob McGee, Annie Coleman, and Tom Nolan. Production assistants, Trent Botello and Carrie Coleman. Spud's Greek chorus is The Folk Singers in Hell. Live music production and broadcast engineering by Mike Renville at the facilities of NWCZ Radio. Promotional services and support provided by Big Freak Media, Seattle's only rock and roll publicist. Opinions expressed on this show do not reflect those of the station, the sponsors, or any living person except Spud Goodman. Copyright 2016 Spud Goodman Productions. David Brenneman speaking. Inside the Spud Goodman Radio Show podcast, copyright 2024, Spud Goodman Productions.